Australian Rugby and their CEO, Bill Polver, came out last night, press conference. They've announced the Western Force have had their Super Rugby licence discontinued. They will no longer be a part of Super Rugby in 2018. There will just be four Australian Super franchises. Well, is this really, though, just symbolic of this complete and utter disaster that Australian Rugby has been and that maybe the management of Sansa have been as well? One of radio's biggest personalities in Australia and a former coach of the Wallabies joins us on the program, Alan Jones. Hi, Alan.
G'day, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Your initial reaction to this announcement, the Western Force no longer part of Super Rugby?
Well, I think you've summed it up. I mean, you can sum it up pretty simply. It's just further proof of the mess that we're in. I thought the judgment or the argument presented by the Australian Rugby Union, which this arbitrator, I don't know who the arbitrator is, which the arbitrator accepted, namely that there's a financial problem and Australia can't afford five teams and so on, is just laughable. I mean, when you actually think, for example, if you're looking for money within Australian rugby, just supposing they are short of money, then you'd cut down the size of head office and the salaries that are being paid there. You wouldn't be paying David Pocock $750,000 a year while he's on sabbatical. You wouldn't be paying test players $12,000 a match when they lose the test. I mean, that's 250,000 every test match that we lose. Well, we've lost a few, so there's a million. Now, I mean, you've got a job there, I've got a job. Part of the deal is we sign up on contract. They don't then pay you on top of the contract every time you broadcast a program. So, you know, there are so many ways. It's a farcical argument. If you take the opposition in Australia to rugby, for example, AFL or rugby league or soccer, then you've got start-up teams like, for example, the Greater Western Giants. They've only been going for 4 years. The AFL have poured a fortune into them. They're now talking about them winning a premiership. You've got to tip money into outfits if you want to grow the game. And Western Australia have done a terrific job. Even their results in Super Rugby, where Australian results were diabolical. We beat one New Zealand team all year. But nonetheless, Western Force almost finished at the top of the Super Rugby division in Australia. And they beat the Waratahs, they beat New South Wales, and they're growing the game. I mean, they're working like navvies over there. They've got tremendous member support, tremendous player support, tremendous grassroots support, and of course now they've got Andrew Forrest, the billionaire, supporting them. And this matter will go to the Supreme Court, so it'll drag on and on and on. And quite frankly, the board ought to resign, never mind Paul, but the whole board is completely out of touch with the needs of Australian rugby, and now here they are, presiding over this absolute disaster. If we can't support five teams in Australia with all our wealth and all our numbers and all our willingness to play, then we should close the whole show down.
Could you have handled a rationale if they had have come out and said, we just simply don't have player depth to sustain five teams? That's been proven by the results comparative to, say, what the New Zealand teams have been doing.
No, that's where I disagree with you. You see, we only have one problem in Australia, and that is coaching. We've got people appointed as coaches who have not coached other teams before, and the people making the appointments have never coached. We've got outstanding young coaches who need to be given a chance. We always run, with due respect to all of you people, we always run for foreigners when we're in tight spots. Cricket does the same thing. And we've played that experiment, and it hasn't worked. And we don't have a problem with talent. I mean, you've only got to go to schoolboy rugby here or club rugby, and the talent is extraordinary. On the other hand, while you get a code behaving like this, mums and dads are not going to sort of send their kids to rugby. They'll go somewhere else. And they're being poached. They're being poached. I mean, one of the most outstanding schoolboy rugby players was this Adam Crichton. He's now playing for South Sydney Rugby League because he just thought that rugby was a disaster. We've got plenty of player depth. We've always had that. New Zealand have always had it. But we've got real problems about coaching. And I think the whole coaching model has collapsed anyway. You know, we've now got head coaches, backs coaches, forwards coaches, kicking coaches, skill coaches, throwing coaches. There's a psychologist or somebody else. All that crap in the game. And it's just, we've lost our way. And this is further proof of the fact we've lost our way. But how would you pay someone $750,000 to give him a sabbatical? I mean, how would you do that? It just doesn't make sense. And yet they're complaining they haven't got any money. Or why would you pay teams over and over again $12,000 when they lose a test match? Why would you then sort of stick them all up in a first-class hotel when a test match is on and then pay them a living away from home allowance, for God's sake? You're putting them in a hotel. They're on a salary. They're on a contract. and then they're getting a living away from home allowance. I mean, none of this makes sense. In other words, the management of the game is completely out of touch with reality.
I guess their argument, Alan, will be, look, if we don't look after our players at the top level, the Northern Hemisphere will gobble them all up and we will simply just continue to reduce our player base here. There will be no athletes that will stand at the top and be role models to youngsters and send that message about aspirations in the game of rugby at a junior level.
Well, I can understand that argument, but you see, that argument ignores one thing. The only thing a New Zealand rugby player wants to do is play for the All Blacks. You can't play for the All Blacks in France. The only thing, from the day he can pull on a pair of boots, he wants to play for New South Wales, or he wants to play for Queensland, then he wants to play for Australia, and many of these people would play for nothing. Now, I understand they want to chase the money, but most of these people chasing the money are at the tail end of their careers. Our job in rugby is to sort of regenerate the game so that there's always another bus pulling up at the station. And you'll find when those circumstances arrive, as you have found now, massive resignations from the game, in a sense, the retirements and all the rest of it. And look what sort of an all-black side we've got. I mean, they can't even pick a team to go to the British Isles with so much talent. And they're virtually an all-black side at home, because you're constantly regenerating the game at the bottom. And that's what we've got to do. We're not short of players. And if they want to go and get their money in France and whatever, that's fine. But, you know, our appeal is wearing the green and gold, and there'll always be stacks of people who'd want to do that, and they'd be happy to do it for nothing.
Bill Pulver saying that he will resign once a suitable replacement is found. Is that part of the problem taken care of? You've suggested the board also need to go, or did he simply inherit this mess from John O'Neill in 2013?
Well, O'Neill left plenty of mess. There's no doubt about that. O'Neill left a mess. There's no doubt about that. Pulver is a very genuine man. And a very decent man. And I think in that sense he's prospered, you know, the representation of Australia. But, you know, we've reached this business of bureaucratisation and corporatisation of sport, where we've got people in charge of the games, whether it's cricket, we've just seen in cricket in Australia, a diabolical mess, where some bloke who was the head of Rio Tinto is running Australian cricket. Well, he thought he was fighting the unions when he was taking on the players and talked that way. Now, he should be gone. But he's not. Now, in cricket and in rugby, something we've got a banker in charge. I'm buggered if I know what a banker would know about the history of the game and the tradition of the game and the best interests of the game. So the board is dysfunctional. We've then got people on the board who are former Wallabies, and you never open their mouth. You've never got them. I've never heard any of them say anything in defence of the players or in defence of what is going wrong. They just obviously fell into line and said, no, we can't support Western Australia, even though Western Australia were beating New South Wales. It's unbelievable. So, you know, there's this corporatisation and bureaucratisation of sport which is killing it. And Bill Pulver, after all, is only the CEO. He's there to implement strategies and policies which are determined by the board. Now, plainly, those strategies and policies have failed. You mean to tell me when Australia signed up the Sanzar for five Australian games, they didn't know anything about the finances of Australian rugby, or did this just suddenly drop down upon them? I mean, these people ought to have known all of that.
I want to ask you, Alan, do administrators here in South Africa and New Zealand also need to be held accountable here?
Do they what?
Do they need to be held accountable, administrators in South Africa and New Zealand who are part of Sanzar?
There's no doubt. Look, fish rot from the top. A fish stinks from the head. And we're on the nose in Australia. And we're even on the nose not because of players, not because of these poor coots at grade rugby who are doing it all for nothing and doing it brilliantly. We'll have semi-finals on today of the grade competition in Sydney. We will get 10,000 people to each of these semi-finals. You won't be able to fit them in. So the grassroots is on fire, thanks to the fact that two young blokes, madly enthusiastic, led by Nick Fordham, decided, well, we'll do a deal with Kerry Stokes and we'll take a television station and see if he'll sign up and see if they'll provide live grade rugby. Well, it's just been an amazing success. But administrators at the top are completely out of touch. They don't know how to talk to players. They don't. If I rang up Quade Cooper today, just take him as an example, a young bloke I talk to quite often because he's copped it from both ends. I mean, you'd find that no administrator of the game has ever spoken to him. They're frightened of the players. They don't talk to the players. They can't relate to the players because they haven't been players. They haven't been coaches. They don't know what makes these people tick. And we're now playing, as in cricket, no different in cricket, we're paying the same price of having this corporatisation and bureaucratisation of Australian sport headed by people who bear no relationship to what sport is all about. And that has to be redefined. And Paul has a history of his boy. He was a good player. He knows a fair bit about rugby. He played rugby with Michael Hawker, one of my players. So he knows a bit about it. But the board dictates policy and strategy. He's implemented that. And what he implemented has been a failure. He's gone. Well, one would hope if there was any honour in the game, the whole board would go. I mean, we've got one of my former players, Papworth, who's forgotten more than they know, and a magnificent bloke. He should be running Australian rugby, and he wouldn't need a board of 10 and a whole heap of other people in the back room, 130 of them, I think. I mean, it just doesn't pass muster when you're arguing the financial limitations of the game. How can you justify giving one of your leading players a sabbatical, I've never heard of it in my life, but paying him $750,000?
Oh, Alan, we
completely... People listening to this program saying, I just heard Alan Jones say that he must have got his figures mixed up because I wouldn't sort of make that in 10 years. No, $750,000 for touring South Africa and shooting wildlife. Hello? God, give me a break.
Is rugby realistically ever going to grow in the state of Victoria, in the city of Melbourne, knowing that it is AFL territory? I mean, if you had to, sitting back here, if you do have to get rid of one Australian franchise, we can argue whether we can keep five or not, but if you do have to get rid of one, I would have thought there would be a greater chance of developing rugby in Perth and Western Australia than there would be in Melbourne and Victoria.
Well, let me ask that question in two parts. One, I was never in favour of the Sanzar model. That was just ego gone mad. When we locked horns with our great trans-Tasman rivals, New Zealand, and let's face it, we always want to beat New Zealand, but if New Zealand are competing, we always want New Zealand to win. So we're almost brothers and sisters in all of this. When we had that model, that was our model. Forget South Africa, forget Argentina, forget Japan. They can grow their game the way they want to grow it in the Northern Hemisphere. When that trans-Tasman rivalry existed, and, you know, I was part of this. I was coaching New South Wales. We play Waikato. We play Manawatu. We do all those sorts of things. How strong was New Zealand and how strong was Australia? So we then changed the model. Okay, just supposing then we've changed the model and this is the particular model we've got. And you're saying, what about Victoria and WA? Well, I just answered that by saying, they said rugby league would never be able to grow in Victoria. It's an AFL home, an AFL centre. Craig Bellamy has led, because it's good coaching, Craig Bellamy has led the Melbourne Storm to the top of the premiership table year after year after year. Now, if you believe the bookies, they're odds on favourite to win the premiership again. So it depends on the personalities and the people that you put in charge. And that's our problem. But in Western Australia, that doesn't apply because in WA, they are making tremendous inroads in grassroots. I mean, Jeff Stook has done a terrific job. He's on the board of Australian Rugby. He immediately resigned. An honourable man has played 900 games. He's in his 50s. He's still playing. And they've prospered the game and sponsored the game. I'm going over there to speak at a gig for them in a couple of weeks' time. And today they're utterly demoralised. And now what you've built into, tragically, into the administration of the game is, it's an awful word to use, but an element of hate. I mean, there are people in WA who just hate Australian rugby for what they're doing to them, and that's from the Premier down. I mean, you've got the Premier, the Deputy Premier, the leading industrialist in WA, they're all backing this outfit. Do you mean to say you couldn't make a team totally independent financially with that kind of support? It's ridiculous. Now the Victorian government have bought the Victorian Rebels. So, you know, these teams will survive, but not if you've got an administration at the top which is paying lip service to Sanzar. They made a commitment to Sanzar, which they couldn't honour. Well, why did they make the commitment to Sanzar? Who did they discuss that with? They didn't discuss it with Western Australia. They didn't discuss it with the rank and file. They didn't discuss it with Victoria. And no one wanted to touch the Brumbies or Queensland. They were left. They were automatic. I mean, the whole way in which this has been handled has just been diabolical. And if you've got any kind of diabolical, deliberative process, this is the way it normally finishes up. And it's finished up in tears.
Look, Alan, just to wrap this up then, if we took your recommendation, say we put a guy like Brett Papworth in charge, we sacked the board of Australian rugby, Bill Pulver's moving on, and common sense started to prevail here, how quickly could you turn Australian rugby around? Can you turn it around, or is it in such a hole now that it's going to take at least 10, 15 years?
No, look, it's easy to turn it around. I mean, how quickly you turn it around? By next season? But I'm sorry, we've got the wrong people coaching the provinces. Simple. Wrong people coaching the provinces. Now, look, I don't get into personalities, but, you know, Nick Stiles in Queensland is a lovely fella, nice fella. He played in the front row a bit. He's never coached anyone in his life, never coached a team in his life. And I've always said, the most successful coaching model is to say, where have we got a schoolboy coach who's taken, and you look at your people, you know, Graham Henry, all the people before him, many of them are schoolmasters. Because when you take a school team, you've only most probably got five or six good players. You think, God, I've got to comb the school now and find another 11 or 12 and put them together. If you win a premiership, someone's going to say, I think this bloke can coach a bit. If you then go up to provincial level, you're not going to have a stack of players that will play for the All Blacks or Australia. You perhaps have seven in your province if you're lucky. Well, you've got to find another 12, 13, and you've got to put a team together. Suddenly this bloke wins a provincial jersey. Geez, this bloke must be able to coach. When you go to the national level, of course, you've got players of tremendous ability. The coaching side of it most probably is the least significant, but you've learned how to pull a team together. Now, none of these people have got that experience. None. They haven't coached, even coached a pig to be dirty. They haven't coached anybody. But they get a job. I don't know how they get a job. I never see the jobs advertised. I don't know who the interviewing panels are, but certainly I'll tell you one thing. There's no one on the interviewing panel that's ever been a successful coach, so they wouldn't even know what questions to ask. You know, that's where the model is wrong. We don't have a problem with players. Now, Pappy knows everything. It's forgotten. As an enthusiast, he'd be terrific. I mean, there must be others. But at the same time, we've got to really think the problem is not the players. The problem is the administration. And when you've got crook administration, everything else suffers. And we've seen this Western Australia thing is a metaphor of that. It's gone on and on and on for 100 and something days. I had Klein on my program, what, 4 months ago? It'll all be happening next week, he said. Well, next week has turned into 5 months.
Alan Jones, we appreciate your time this afternoon on the program. Thank you.